Now, Wellness Wednesday, we're talking teeth, gums, mouths, all kind of dental health. Dr. Dara Reynolds, partner at Errigal Dental, joins us now. Good morning to you. Dr. Reynolds, how are you keeping?
Very well. How's the form? You well?
It's good. And it's good to have you on board. And if any of you have any questions as it relates to your dental health, your mouth health, you'll not get anyone better than Dr. Dara Reynolds to answer your questions. So get them into us now, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or call 07491 25000. I was a dentist recently. It was a great experience. But I realised that I neglect to brush the insides of my teeth. Not anymore, Dara. Are we guilty of that, a lot of us, or am I an outlier?
No. Like everything, I mean, people are a mixed bag. So, you know, some people that sort of, yeah, will tend to brush what's visible. And then some who maybe neglect what's less seen. But yeah, obviously it's a good idea to try and, you know, brush all the surfaces of all the teeth if you can.
From the tutting of the hygienist?
that maybe there's room for improvement, perhaps.
Indeed.
We try not to be judgmental, though. Just try to be helpful.
Yeah, of course. No, and I say that with the tongue in my cheek. What's your opinion of composite bonding, says the listener? My teeth are fairly good. I never had any work done, but getting married this year and looking for that perfect smile.
Yeah, composite bonding is a real sort of buzz phrase, or has been over the last couple of years. It's a sort of a coverall term. It means, you know, different things to different people. Composite is just your standard. It's a resin. It's a plastic filling material. It's used for essentially all fillings in back teeth now, because people will remember the old dark amalgam metal fillings, which are now thankfully largely a thing of the past. They're very rarely used anymore. But anyway, composite now, when it tends to be used on the front teeth, it's called composite bonding. And as I say, it's a coverall term to cover when essentially people want to maybe straighten the teeth, align the teeth. So teeth are a little short, make them a bit longer. If the teeth are slightly crooked, you can add composite selectively to different surfaces to make the teeth appear as if they're straighter. Now, it has its limitations, and there are pros and cons to it, like there are to all sorts of treatments. If your teeth are very, very crooked, it won't give you the effect probably you're after. You should really be thinking in terms of orthodontics, braces to straighten the teeth. Also, if the teeth are very discolored, you may end up having to add quite a lot of composite to the teeth to hide that discoloration, which then leaves the teeth looking pretty bulky. So it's thanks to, you know, Instagram and TikTok and things like that, it's become very, very, very popular. And you'll have an awful lot of people coming in now where once upon a time they would have been asking about braces or asking about veneers or crowns, and now it's composite bonding. And as I say, it does have its limitations. It's a really useful treatment modality. It really has its uses, but it won't fix every problem.
Yeah. And I suppose, do people have to be conscious too of when you put something on your teeth that, you know, we're talking very small distances here and how your teeth present themselves. Yeah. Like, yeah, it can quite alter the look of someone's smile or shape of their teeth, yeah, you know, through a number of treatments there. Do people ever be surprised at that? Or I'm not sure that you do that work, but you know what I mean?
Yeah we do. And you'll find that most dentists now do composite bonding of one type or another. But in certain cases, it's all about case selection, Greg. I mean, in the right case and with the right person, it can work wonders. But people sometimes come in asking about composite bonding. I sense they get disappointed when they're told, look, composite bonding isn't for you. It's not going to achieve the result you want. And you should really be looking at A, B and C, other types of treatments. Or it's quite often not one thing or the other either. I mean, you can use some orthodontics along with composite bonding, whitening along with composite bonding. So as it does play a part, and it is a really, really useful treatment. But, you know, everybody, I'm amazed over the last 12 to 18 months in particular, how many people come in asking about composite bonding, because they've seen TikTok videos and you know, great results can be achieved, but you know, it has its limitations.
And expectations have to be managed. But I suppose that's the benefit, actually getting in front of a professional, because you know, you get a realistic potential outcome or what have you. We're going to get a couple of questions on this, so I'll just get it out of the way right away, because it comes in each time. People struggling to get registered with a dentist. In Letterkenny particularly, and then there's an issue too for some people with a medical card and some people without a medical card.
Yeah, there is a nationwide, it's not just Letterkenny. I mean, all over the country there's quite a shortfall of dentists. Now that is being made up gradually to a degree by an influx of foreign dentists coming from both within and outside of the EU. It obviously, if like everything sort of EU or outside EU related, dentists from within the EU can get registered here reasonably quickly. Over the last year or two, there's been a lot of dentists coming in, say, for example, from Ukraine, who are outside the EU, and then they can register too, but the process is a little longer. They have to do some equivalency exams. Primarily, they have to establish that their English language skills are good, so that they can, you know, obviously communicate with patients effectively. Because, I mean, it's one area, so like any branch of medicine, you have to be able to communicate with your patients, find out, you know, what it is they want and what can you help them with. As regards the medical card end of things, I think it is becoming increasingly difficult, again, nationwide, to get a medical card. Dentists over the last many years, a lot of dentists unhappy with the scheme, gradually people drifting away from it, so therefore the fewer dentists doing it.
How it was described to me is that, because sometimes I think we in the public can view the dentist as a sort of an arm of the state or a public service or what have you, and to some extent there is that, but there is a business and you have a certain amount of capacity. And if you have to have a successful business, you know, you need an income from the private customer, because if you were to do an awful lot of public work and given the rate of pay that is available from the state, you wouldn't necessarily, not you, when I say you, I'm using a generic term, yeah. You know, you don't necessarily have a viable business to cover all the overheads and costs. Is that kind of part of the issue here?
Certain part of the issue. You see, dentistry in Ireland has been basically has been farmed out by the government to the private sector. There are still some dentists that work in HSE dental clinics, but it's an increasingly small number. And my information is that number is growing smaller every year. So essentially, what the government is doing is, say, different to medicine. If you have a medical card, you go to your doctor or you go to hospital. There's no pathway similar to that in terms of dentistry. Yes, there are some HSE clinics, but they're primarily their responsibility is mostly to see children up to the age of 14, I think. So a lot of adults are in a catch-22 where they can't access public dental care because most dental surgeries are struggling to accommodate new patients. You know, a lot of dentists have closed their books to new patients regardless. Like, so, you know, then if they are taking on new patients, they will look at that and say, look, you know, if I'm struggling to see the patients I have, I'm not going to take on, you know, a lot more medical card patients where they will struggle to make a profit, you know, and keep their businesses going effectively.
Yeah. Should I get mercury fillings removed? And is it costly? I have them from my teenaged years.
My opinion is no. Because through your life, your amalgam fillings, as that's what people refer to as mercury fillings, will eventually they wear out, will need to be replaced. I think it's a mistake. Personally, I've a number of amalgam fillings in my own head. They've been there since I was a kid too. They're not costing me a thought, because one of the slight risks, if you like, when removing amalgam fillings is that there is a certain amount of mercury vapor released into your system. So if you go and do like a lot of them at the one time, you're releasing an awful lot more mercury into your system than you would be by just having them in your mouth. Mm. And amalgam is a very durable material. It's very tough. That's why it was used successfully for a couple of hundred years. You know, it lasts forever. Sometimes people will get amalgam fillings as a kid or in their teens, they'll still be there, you know, or I'll have patients who will have gotten them and they're in their 70s and 80s and still have the same fillings that they got as children. So the amount of, in inverted commas, mercury coming off them into your system is tiny. And unless they're giving you a hassle, I'm inclined to leave them be.
Yeah. I seem to have a lot of thrush in my mouth. Anything I can do, it's under my dentures on the top.
Yeah, there is people who have had thrush will be familiar with product Caniston or any sort of, it's an antifungal. But you can get a version of that you can literally coat onto the denture, and that will basically keep the antifungal treatment in contact with your gums, in your palate. Principally, it tends to happen in the palate more than in the lower jaw. But what that patient or what that person can also do, what they find really helpful, is to actually leave their dentures out overnight, leave them soaking in Sterident. It's another product for cleaning the denture, helps to keep them bacteria-free, cleaner. So they'll do themselves a huge favour, but simply by leaving their dentures out at night. The analogy I use is you wouldn't leave your socks and shoes on 24/7. Your feet get a bit stinky. So it's the same for your mouth. Your mouth needs a break from the dentures, and nighttime is the best time. Just leave them out.
All right. I'm 65. I've taken great care of my teeth all of my life, but lately they are very yellow. Is this an age thing? I don't want to get them whitened. Any advice, or is whitening the only way to go?
Yeah, our teeth do gradually darken as we get older, unfortunately. That sort of yellowy staining tends to be the most obvious sign of it. Now, unless it possibly could be a surface stain. So if this person may try going to their dentist or their hygienist, getting a really thorough cleaning done. And if it's a surface stain, that'll shift it. But if it's inherent within the body of the tooth, within the enamel, which is part of the healing process, the only way to improve upon that is teeth whitening. Now, but a lot of the people sometimes say perhaps a man who's in the 60s might be concerned that, I don't want to have this TikTok grin, you know, really white teeth. But a lot of whitening systems are gradual. So you can almost get to the level you want to get to. You don't go, it's not from going from 0 to 60. You know, you can whiten them gradually. When you get to a point you're happy, then stop.
Exactly, and at just 65, why not? My daughter's 7 and has an enamel deficiency on her teeth. Can you recommend the best toothpaste and mouthwash for her to use, or indeed what kind of toothbrush might she use?
Yeah, that's a tough problem to deal with if kids have enamel deficiencies. It can lead to quite crumbly, weak teeth that can develop cavities and decay very easily. Most toothpastes, to be honest, are much of a muchness. You're looking for an age-appropriate toothpaste that has fluoride in it. Fluoride is one thing that will help to strengthen the teeth. Young children's toothpaste actually tends to have lower levels of fluoride, or will have lower levels of fluoride than an adult toothpaste. If you're confident that your child is good about brushing and good about, say, spitting out the toothpaste, in other words, isn't swallowing half the toothpaste, then you could think about switching them onto an adult toothpaste earlier. Another good thing to do is called no-rinse brushing, and this is what's taught now to dentists in dental school and all the way through. And it is just as it sounds. And in fact, everybody should be doing this. It's better for their health of their teeth. You literally just brush, spit out your toothpaste. That's it.
That's it. Do you remember about 3 or 4 years ago, I says to you, is it not crazy that we brush our teeth and then do the mouthwash, swirl it round and spit out all the goodness?
Yeah. You were dead right, Greg.
I'm a visionary. Okay.
You're indeed. Yeah, so because if you think about it, the real reason is that the concentration of fluoride in the toothpaste is higher than in the mouthwash. So as you said, there's no point rinsing away the more effective toothpaste with the less effective mouthwash.
Even a broken clock is right once or twice a day. Okay. Ever since visiting the hygienist and seeing the harm that not brushing the inside of your teeth and mouth does, I will always do. Plus, having a good electric brush is a must. Yes, indeed. I didn't even realise I wasn't doing it, if that makes sense. And the hygienist was very good to me too and not really tutting. A couple of callers asking, is there a reluctance? And you're not speaking on behalf of the industry, but maybe there's sort of a sense out there. Is there a reluctance from Irish dentists to do the follow-up work for teeth done abroad? You know, like maybe pick up the pieces if someone's went out for, you know, implants or veneers or whatever. I mean, as I say, I'm not asking you to comment about you personally, but is there a sense in the industry?
Yeah, I'd say undoubtedly, because you're finding people have gone, they might have spoken to their own dentist about having perhaps a crown or a couple of crowns or an implant. And then they go away and they have 24 crowns done and half a dozen implants. And so a dentist, I think it's like any profession, or a plumber, an electrician, a builder is going to be hesitant about getting involved trying to rectify the work that somebody else has done, particularly when you know deep down and you know to your bones that there was way too much treatment done. It was done in far too short a period of time. And you really, because once you start, and you want to help the individual, you want to help the patient, but once you get involved, then it does become your responsibility. As far as a healthcare professional, you're trying to help people. But of course, there's going to be a reluctance to get involved in a case that you know deep down you could be really getting into a whole can of worms here,
When does the blame start then? If it really gets complicated, does the blame start once you intervene, or does it start in Turkey?
Does the blame start to shift? Because, like, when somebody goes to Turkey and they call it the Turkey 24, they go off and they get 24 crowns. Yeah, and that's all been done in the space of, you know, a week or 10 days. That puts enormous pressure on the person's teeth. And that's why people end up having so much trouble. So, you know, end up having teeth that die, ending up needing root canals. And, you know, when you go to Turkey, the clinic there knows 9 times out of 10, they're never going to see you again. You know, like, so they'll do all that work. They'll pat you on the head, wave you off to the plane again. And then knowing that it's not going to be their problem, or most patients are unlikely to turn up at their doorstep again. So I would say to anybody who's doing that, I mean, I have patients who have had it done. I've seen good and I've seen bad. But if you are intent on doing it, do your research, particularly get personal referrals, you know, somebody that you know that's been there. And please do not be tempted by over-treatment. I've seen people who maybe needed a crown or a couple of crowns coming back with dozens and dozens, thinking, well, the more I spend, the more I save. But it's a fool's economy. It does not work out in the long run.
A caller went to the dentist, one of their middle back teeth. X-ray showed no filling. But they, when they bite down, there's a reaction to sugar and a bit of pain when they bite down. They mentioned it and it was x-rayed again. Still no need for a filling and nothing looking suspect around the root. What could it be? I think a crack in the tooth was mentioned. But what could that be?
Yeah, it's a cracked tooth. Cracked teeth are tricky ones to deal with, because and this problem increases with age. As we get older, it's just wear and tear, miles on the clock. We can develop little hairline fractures, little hairline cracks in teeth. A tooth, unlike your bone, you crack a bone, it repairs itself. A tooth has no ability to repair itself, bond itself back together. And unfortunately, a filling isn't going to help, because all filling does, you're removing tooth tissue, you're replacing it with composite resin. That doesn't really help. The problem is that the two halves of the cracked tooth, when this person bites down, they momentarily or instantly just get wedged apart slightly. You get this sudden, sharp, sudden pain through the tooth. Now, it tends not to last. It tends to go away again after a couple of seconds. But the only treatment, the reason dentists won't provide it as an opinion straight away is because, you know, you're talking about perhaps needing a root canal and a crown, which is a lot of work and it's a lot of expense. And unless you're damn sure that that's going to work for the patient, you're going to be slow to advise that.
Yeah, I get you. Just a couple more. I know you're incredibly busy. I often wake with tension in the jaw and a sore head. A few friends have mentioned that I might be grinding my teeth in my sleep. How do I know if that's happening? How do I know what's happening and how do I fix it?
Yeah, it sounds as if that person is grinding. Yeah. What I've been recommending people do is to literally go to your local sports shop, get yourself like a sports mouth guard, one of the, you know, quite cheap ones. You soften it, you warm it, you mold it to your teeth. Now try and wear that every night over a couple of weeks. And if you start seeing signs of wear and tear on that, well, that's diagnostic, that's definitive, you know you're grinding. So therefore then you can go to your dentist and say, look, I know I'm grinding, I need a mouth guard. A dental, like a custom-made professional mouth guard, they're really, really effective at stopping grinding and protecting the teeth. But again, they're expensive. So that's what I tell my patients to do. If we suspect that they're grinding, get yourself a sports mouth guard, wear that every night for a couple of weeks. If you see signs of wear on it, well, Bob's your uncle, you know you're grinding, and then we can make you up a night guard.
My son has a tongue scraper and it's disgusting. But listen, that's just my own personal feelings.
Well, a tongue scraper, yeah.
But this leads into a question. It's just, I don't know, there's something about it. It's like, ugh. But anyway, is tongue scraping as important as toothbrushing or teeth brushing, or do you see it as important at all? Ask the listener.
It's important. I've got two teenagers at home who do it religiously.
Must be on TikTok then. I thought it was taking the lid off a beer.
It's again the influence of Snapchat or TikTok or something. I don't know. Personally, to me, I don't think it's not as important. But I mean, it certainly does no harm. And certainly there will be a certain amount of bacteria on the tongue like there are in the teeth. So, you know, it can't do any harm. It might make you retch a bit, but if you can get over that, it's fine. It's certainly not doing any harm, so why not?
I retch picking up my toothbrush, like literally, that's like preempt. I go, anyway, last one. How can you overcome a fear of going to the dentist? It is a funny one, isn't it? Because a lot of stuff gives me worry and anxiety and stress. But going to the dentist was never kind of one of those things. I did go through a stage where I thought they were going to diagnose something in my mouth that wasn't teeth related. But hopefully I'm overcoming all of that stuff. But that's just a fact. And the reason I say it is because other people might feel the same. But this caller, do you have any go-to tips about, first instance, is speak to a dentist or ring the dentist and explain to them you have an issue?
This is something that I think affects older patients perhaps a lot more than younger people haven't so many bad experiences in the bag, so to speak. I think a dentistry...
You're not selling it, Dara. You're not really selling this.
But I think dentistry in days of yore and years gone by probably was a less pleasant experience. I mean, I think people should get some solace from the fact that anesthetics now are really, really good. If you're having work done, your tooth's supposed to be numb, it will be numb. I think, some of my patients, they bring along earbuds, earphones, whatever, listen to music while you're here. And if it's something you can't get over, it's like a proper phobia. Well, obviously people can do cognitive behavioral therapy with that, but there, some dentists will provide dentistry under sedation. You can get what's called inhalation gas, or you can get what's more effective is IV sedation, a little line into the back of your hand. So you're not actually out. You're not actually unconscious. You're awake and you're conscious, but you've no memory of the procedure afterwards. You just feel a bit spaced out afterwards. So some dentists will do that. And it's very effective if somebody has a phobia that they just cannot cope with. So fine.
Yeah, and you just get through the door and then you're sorted. All right, listen, Dara, thanks so very much indeed. I really do appreciate it. Have a great day. That's Dr. Dara Reynolds, partner at Errigal Dental. And we really appreciate him joining us for our Dental Health Specialist part of this Wellness Wednesday. Coming up shortly, Chris Ashmore will be joining us with Business Matters. I just want to run through a few things just before we get Chris in. A thank you from a listener. I was in the new Dunns last Wednesday, this in Letterkenny. I'd just gotten a new Revolut card and phone. I didn't know how to work it to get the money out of Revolut. I had €25 in my AIB account. The shopping was €42. The lady behind heard and helped me. I know nothing about her. I offered her the 25 that I had, but she wouldn't take it. She was a blonde-haired lady with her grown-up son. If she sees this or hears this on the radio, could she leave her number or name so I can thank her? There aren't many people who would offer to pay for your shopping, so I'd just really like to say thank you. That comes in from Lorraine in Letterkenny, and we've often found ourselves in this situation, but how lucky is Lorraine to have a wonderful citizen behind her to help? A caller says it takes the French to show us all what a real protest is. I don't know what has happened to us. We used to be able to, back in the 60s, do it. I remember Dublin blocked and you couldn't get out or in. That comes in from Celia. I think the battle often now is for the hearts and minds. And I think even people who are conscious of, say, for instance, a protest in Dublin or what have you, you have to be careful in it because, unless there's hundreds of thousands of people involved, you can have the story turned against you very, very quickly. You can be called names, you can be accused of disrupting this, that and the other, you can be accused of targeting business or whatever it might be. And I think an awful lot of this now is not necessarily in terms of numbers on the streets. And this is only just, I'm just riffing here. I think it's really almost as much as what the media report or what people post on social media. And I wonder if that's part of it. I don't know. When I had measles many years ago, a dark room for 3 days, no big deal, of course. Thank God that was you. But for many, it's not quite that simple. I had measles too with no complications. But if there are complications for others, my personal experience really is irrelevant. Please emphasise the dangers of expectant mothers who come into contact with or contract measles. It can cause deafness in the baby in the womb. I remember that messaging from when I was younger, actually. Hi, Greg. I walk every night from Cockhill to Buncrana, but since the storm, it's become a problem. There are no streetlights, and the only dog poop bin on this walk has been removed. So you are walking a dog on a lead, holding a torch and trying to lift dog poop in the dark and then carry it home. It's a disaster. People are just going to leave the poo, not bother lifting it, and this causes another problem. Can you find out what's happening here? We can try and find out what's happening with those lights. How is Eamon Ryan getting to Brazil on his St. Patrick's Day junket? Cycling, I think. Surely a man of his calibre and convictions is flying there. He'll probably head off rowing in a corra out of Dublin to keep his emissions down. No, his emissions and that of his party colleagues equate to two family cars driving around for a year. All right, let's take a break. Chris Ashmore's in with some business news and look forward to the Business Matters podcast after these.
Business Matters, in association with the Faculty of Business at ATU Donegal. For a career in financial governance, consider the Level 9 MA in Governance and IT in Financial Services, starting in January. Contact the Exec Ed Coordinator on 91862006 or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie today.
Okay, Business Matters is a weekly podcast from Highland Radio where we highlight platform business people, businesses, give information and what have you every single week. And there's a fantastic back catalogue of podcasts for you to listen to. Or if you're bang up to date, there's a brand new one available right now. Chris Ashmore is the presenter of Business Matters and he's in studio with us. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Before we get to the actual content of the podcast, can we catch up on some news? And I read that the Local Enhancement Programme has launched for this year. What's it about?
Yeah, now this is basically a fund. There's money there for small community groups and organisations to apply for assistance to help with building works or small improvements to premises or to purchase equipment that is for community use, so very much at a grassroots level. It's been administered by the Donegal Local Community Development Committee. There's more details on their website, and the deadline is at the end of February. So look, it's a chance for small groups, you know, to get a little bit of funding. You put in your application and hopefully you'll be successful.
Yeah, you don't know unless you bid. Now, many people might wonder, when are workers most productive? There's an answer for everything, Chris.
Yeah, there was a study carried out by an office supplier called Codex, and they did some research into working habits, and they found that people are most productive on a Monday and a Tuesday, and then they drop off as the week goes on. And they also found a couple of other interesting things, that 32% of Irish workers say a comfortable office chair enhances remote productivity. And 57% of workers said they are more productive when working remotely. But one in four said that they found that they struggled at times with feelings of isolation. So, you know,
mixed bag.
All these things mixed bag.
There's a big push to get people back into the office, though.
Yeah, there's a lot for it.
There is a big push on now. I think that experiment was tried, and a lot of the big companies are hiring, and the proviso being that you're in the office. You keeping a good eye on any developments or planned developments for us, Chris?
Yeah, always something going on the planning front. The Apex Housing Association seeking planning permission from Donegal County Council to build 32 two-storey homes at Convoy Town Parks. So more houses on the way. Harvey's Point Hotel, there are just small plans relative to the size of the hotel there. They're looking to extend three new bedrooms, a conversion of a store area, and a new front of house area for guests, plus an overflow car park for 26 vehicles. parking can be an issue at hotels. Mm. And I see also planning permission has been granted for a new leisure centre in Buncrana, including a 25-metre pool. So that's great news for Inishowen, and hopefully that will proceed very soon.
Right. Now, the ECB has left interest rates unchanged, but still the prediction is that as early as this half of the year, we are going to see interest rates begin to be cut.
Yeah, so we last year they were very much on an upward spiral. European Central Bank has left interest rates unchanged at 4%, but all the indications are that as the year goes on, we will see them coming down. So that's good news if you're looking for a mortgage, or indeed if you have a variable mortgage. And of course, that'll filter through to car loans, personal loans, everything else.
For sure, and sentiment and spend, and hopefully business. Coupled with that, further announcement of electricity prices being reduced from a high level, it has to be said. And I am a little bit conscious of these in that there is very clearly one company in the Irish market who is cheaper than everyone else. And often I think some of the other companies, they reduce their price, but they're not
follow suit.
They're not actually going below the lowest in the market. So in terms of competition, I'm not sure. But we did see the lowest go lower more recently. But anyway, anytime we see prices reducing, it has to be welcomed, I think, Chris.
Absolutely. And, you know, people might hear about that there's a new wholesale price index and it's out, and it's showed just that, you know, that trend continuing to cut. But there is, of course, a time lag because these companies, they're spot buying on the market for the oil or whatever it is months in advance. Mm. So it takes time to filter through. But again, it's good news. Things are on the way down there. So your electricity bills are going down and not up.
And just the results of a recent CSO survey on businesses.
Yeah, this was a survey that was carried out by the CSO just on businesses in Ireland. And it was interesting to note that it was a survey of businesses in Ireland. Now, it related to 2021, so it's a little bit out of date,
okay,
but it was only just issued on this Monday. But foreign multinational companies play a huge role in Ireland. And if I was to ask you to guess, have you any idea how many people would work in foreign multinational companies?
Half a million? I don't know.
It's 571,000. That's a lot of people.
I was only 70,000.
Yeah, that was a very good reply.
Yeah, yeah.
A man with his finger on the pulse.
Right, quirky website time.
Yeah, I think you like quirky websites. So there's a website called greatcirclemap.com. And basically you can put in, I was on it there, and I put in Donegal Airport, and I thought, Donegal Airport to Hong Kong. And it will show you the distance between airports. And it also shows you what's called a circle path, which is known as a geodesic path.
This is based on the flawed data that the world is actually not flat. I'm not sure about this, Christopher.
The shortest possible route between two points on the
surface.
So what
do you put in? Donegal Airport.
But if you go into can you see the about section? The little section says about.
Yes.
Now, if you click on that, and it gives you an example of if you were flying from Los Angeles, to Dubai.
Yes.
And it shows the quickest way is actually over the North Pole.
Wow, so that's good for those watching at home.
You wouldn't think when you're looking at things.
So why don't you, I suppose the world's turning?
Now, of course, airlines don't go the shortest route because you have corridors in the sky, so to speak, and then there's political considerations. But something, Greg, that I suspect you might have a little bit of fun looking at and seeing.
Which
things.
Normally means I miss out what you're about to say. Anyway, okay, that's good. quite interesting. But of course, as I say, this is based on the yet to be proven theory that the world's in fact round.
I wonder, did the man who landed on the moon, eh?
No, well, that was filmed in Wales.
Well, yeah.
I'm joking. Right, let's see what's coming up on the pod.
Yeah, this week, Adam Graham runs the Recharge Recovery Room at the Ora Leisure Centre here in Letterkenny. So he only went into business last April, so a new business. It's going very well. And if you've got sore limbs or you've been doing intense activity, you can go in here and you've everything from compression boots to ice baths, so hot and cold therapy. And you come out feeling all refreshed. So this is a clip from the podcast.
After school, I got into fitness instructing, and then I progressed on to being a personal trainer in the Northwest Regional College there in Derry. And then I've gone on then into sports nutrition. I've done that online. And yeah, anatomy and physiology has always been a strong background of mine, hence the interest going in now to recovery as well. So,
and you spent some time abroad as well?
I did. I actually got my first job in the fitness industry down with Bendel and Gyms in Jervis Street in Dublin, which was fantastic. And then worked across Northwood and other areas, Sandyford, with Bendel and Gyms. And then I moved out to Dubai then with Fitness First, and I worked as a personal trainer. And then back here as well with PT in Derry and in Strabane as well. And I've been lucky enough to work as a fitness instructor and teach classes here in Dora Leisure Centre, the Razzablue Hotel. And yeah, I've had a lot of experience, and it's, you can call it work. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's nice to do what you enjoy.
All right, Chris, ice baths seem to be all the rage now on social media. Everyone's swimming in icy waters or in a wheelie bin or a... Now, obviously, your guest there, it's not a wheelie bin. But have you... You've done an ice... I haven't. You were asking me just before we cut from the clip. I've never done an ice bath. No, I'm not sure I will.
Short and sweet, but you do feel invigorated afterwards. You're going from one extreme to the other. And the bonus down there is after the ice bath, you go into the hot tub. So,
Listen, it's the science is proven on it because it releases all these kind of chemicals. I'd just be afraid of the... You know, what it's impact it might have on me, the shock factor. Okay, listen, I'll try anything once within reason and within the law, of course. Right, the full interview is available right now on our podcast in the Listen Back section of our website. That's Adam Graham of Recharge Recovery Room at the Aura Leisure Centre. Interesting work and an interesting story as to how we got there. And you can listen to it on the radio after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. Chris, and if anyone wants to contact you.
Yes, the email is businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chris, really appreciate you calling in. We'll be back with more after this break. So, we have HSC National Cancer Control Program and its partners are inviting you to a free public webinar on lung and bowel cancer ahead of World Cancer Day. Now, almost 2,600 people are diagnosed with lung cancer and over 2,500 people are diagnosed with bowel cancer each year in Ireland. Now, for a lot of people, that won't necessarily rush them to the doctors or it won't rush them to get a checkup. For some people it will, but for others, and it depends on your state of mind, it might make you feel fearful and worried and you might not act on it at all. But that's not the function of conversations like this. The conversation is about, you know, go and get yourself checked out, early interventions and the potential for positive outcomes as well. Dr. Breda Neville is specialist in public health with the HSC's National Cancer Control Programme and she joins us now. Good morning, doctor. Thanks for your time.
Hi, good morning, Greg.
And the focus, is it, particularly from our perspective as part of this upcoming day, is on lung and bowel cancers.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned there, Greg, lung and bowel cancers are two of the most common cancers that occur in Ireland at the moment. But I suppose there's two really good pieces of good news. So the first is that there are lots of things that we can all do to reduce our own risk of cancer. And the second is that there are signs and symptoms that you can watch out for, that so you'll know when you need to go to your doctor so that you can have your cancer, if you have a cancer, picked up early, in order to give yourself the best chance of having a successful treatment and a successful outcome.
And I know many people, I don't know many people who have had lung cancer, but I know many people, a number of people, sorry, who've had bowel cancer. And thankfully, it was caught early and treated. And it's tough and there's a process to be gone through. But thankfully, they've come out the other end. But the early... early diagnosis is very helpful.
Yes, early diagnosis is key, really. And I suppose in terms of bowel cancer, there are a few things that you need to look out for, a few signs and symptoms. So first of all, if there's any change in your bowel habits, so any change in your stool, so your poo, basically. So if you're pooing more often than normal, if you're having looser stools, if you're passing any blood from your back passage, if you're having any
period of time, Breda,
in terms of the bleeding, I suppose if you have any bleeding from your back passage, you should really go to your doctor to get that checked out. In terms of the change in bowel habit, if your bowel habit has changed over a period of 6 weeks or more, really beyond what's normal for you, then you should head into your GP and just get that checked out.
And just in relation to blood in your stools, do you differentiate between blood that you might see on your tissue separate to your stool versus something that appears to be through your stool?
Well, yes, in that blood, often blood and wiping can be something like, for example, like hemorrhoids. But if you see any blood in your stool or any blood on wiping, I suppose you go to your doctor and you speak to them, and then they will take your history. They might examine you, and they'll decide then whether you need to look into it further. So if you have any blood at all, really, you should go to see your doctor.
And there are many things it could be. One of which is bowel cancer, and you're not going to the doctor to get a diagnosis. You're going to get a diagnosis of cancer per se. You're going to the doctor to find out precisely what it is and the correct course of action. And if it is bowel cancer, then obviously there is a process then to be followed.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose the important thing is if you do have any of these symptoms. So as I was saying, any change in your bowel habit, any blood in your stool, any pain in your tummy or pain in your back passage that's not normal for you, any loss of appetite, unexplained weight loss, or if you're just feeling very tired and, you know, for anything really that's not normal for you, you're going to your doctor. But there are many, you know, very benign, very straightforward things that can explain these symptoms. So you're not going to get a diagnosis of cancer. What you're doing is you're going to your doctor just to get checked out, just to be sure. If your doctor will then talk to you, take your history, examine you, and then they'll decide whether they think it's likely to potentially be something more serious. If they do think that it's possible that you have cancer, they'll refer you on for further tests at that point.
In terms of lung cancer and early diagnoses of that, or, you know, getting an opinion early, what should we be looking out for?
Again, so absolutely. So I suppose the first thing is if you have a cough that's going on for more than 3 weeks. If you're somebody who has an ongoing cough, that you cough all the time, if there's any change in what's normal in your cough pattern. Again, if you're coughing up any blood, if you have any shortness of breath that's unusual for you, any pain in your chest, or again, if you have any unexplained weight loss or loss of appetite, or if you're feeling particularly tired or unwell on an ongoing basis, you should pop into your GP and just get checked out. But again,
and that would include, you know yourself, there's a bug going around at the moment that people have a dry, persistent cough, and then sometimes it's a wet cough, and then some. The worst thing, what we shouldn't be doing is sort of self-triaging or diagnosing, should we? That is, you know, you'll know what it is, but don't put it down to something else. Get that checked out if there's something in the back of your head that's saying something to you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if your cough is going on for more than a few weeks, so more than 3 weeks is generally what we would say, just go in and get it checked out. And I suppose the bottom line as well is if you're worried, just go to the doctor. You know, they're not going to be annoyed if you show up just to check it out. So if the cough is persisting, don't self-triage. Don't make your, just pop in and your doctor can check it out for
you. And there is an awful lot of conversation at the moment about, you know, how busy GPs are, how busy acute hospitals are, only go in the case of an emergency. I think if people are concerned about some of the things we're talking about, you disregard that and you go and get checked. There's not a GP in this land or where it's relevant in other areas, a hospital that does not want to see someone who is concerned about their health.
Absolutely. What we don't want is people staying at home with these symptoms and worrying that they can't present because the doctor is too busy. You know, the doctors in the GPs, the doctors in the hospitals, all the healthcare staff, if you have a symptom that you're worried about, they want you to come. They want you to get checked out. You know, early detection is really important in terms of giving you the best chance of having a good outcome. Often these things turn out to be something with a simple explanation and nothing to worry about. But the most important thing is anything that you're worried about, pop into your GP and just get them checked out.
And of course, if you're eligible for bowel screening, you know, I mean, I think a lot of your advice, regardless of age, you know, take it on board. But there also is the bowel screening program as well, which I'm sure you'd encourage people to engage in.
Absolutely. So bowel screening is a free program, which is available for anybody who's aged between 59 and 69 in Ireland at the moment. So in order to get a letter of invitation, you need to be registered on the bowel screen register. So if you want to check whether you're registered, just go to bowelscreen.ie and it'll tell you how to get checked there. Once you're on the register, if you're between the ages of 59 and 60, you'll receive a letter. Generally, you'll receive your first letter between the ages of 50 and 61. And if you opt in, what happens is you get just a little test in the post where you provide a little sample of your stool, a little sample of your poo. That gets sent off. It's checked for blood. If blood is detected in your stool, you'll be contacted then in order to do further screening, which normally takes the form of a colonoscopy. So a colonoscopy is a procedure whereby a small tube is placed into the bowel with a very small camera, just so that the doctor can have a look in your bowel just to see what's going on in there. It might sound scary. It's nothing to worry about. You're sedated, so you're not aware of what's going on. It's a very routine procedure that people have all the time. And then if there are any concerns, the doctor can have a look into your bowel and see where you go from there.
I'd also sort of referenced in some of the documentation, but do people with a family history need to be extra careful? Not exclusively careful, but extra careful.
Yeah, so people with a family history of bowel cancer. So when we say a family history, what we generally mean is a close relative. So your mother or your father or a brother or sister. So those people may be at increased risk, people who have members of close family members who have had bowel cancer. So what you need to do there is you need to discuss your risk with your GP. There are some conditions, genetic conditions, that do make you more at risk of developing bowel cancer, and your GP may refer you to a specialist just to look at your risk and decide whether you need to have more frequent surveillance. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, people have regular colonoscopies, but that would be decided on a case-by-case basis. So just if you're worried about family history, just discuss it with your GP and you can take it from there.
Okay, and obviously the advice, don't start smoking or stop smoking, limit
Absolutely.
Your alcohol intake. Be as active as you can, stay as close to a healthy weight as you possibly can, and ensure that you're eating a healthy, balanced diet. And also, interestingly, I note now, to check the radon levels in your home or workplace and to take action to reduce them if necessary. It's interesting that has now become part of cancer prevention advice now.
Yeah, so I suppose with lung cancer, the single most important thing that you can do is not smoking. Ideally, you don't start smoking in the first place. But if you already smoke, it's never too late to quit. Quitting smoking at any stage will reduce your risk of lung and, in fact, bowel and several other cancers. And if you need any information on quitting, you can go to quit.ie. Radon is a radioactive gas that occurs naturally in the environment. It doesn't have a taste, it doesn't have a colour, it doesn't have a smell. And if you're exposed to radon, mm-hmm. high levels of radon over a long period of time, it can increase your risk okay. of lung cancer.
Rita, that's where we have to leave it. I will mention yeah. the seminar first thing on the show tomorrow. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
I know that's important.
So just to say that we'll be going into all of that in a lot more detail. We'll have a panel of experts on our free webinar tomorrow. And if anybody would like to register, just go to hse.ie/cancerprevention.
Perfect. And it runs from 1 p.m. to 2:15 p.m.
And more and you'll have access to a recording to watch it later if you're not available.
Thank you very much indeed. That's where we have to leave it on the programme today. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Stay tuned. Aidan's up after the break and the news with Around the Northwest.